What's going on, everybody? This is the Specifist with another episode. So, I don't really know some of the stuff in this episode. I don't absolutely agree with every part of it that I was doing because I was just kind of spitballing as I usually do. And I want to do some follow-ups. I hope. I don't know if I'm going to do any follow-ups. I'm not going to say that because once you say something like that, typically speaking, from what I find, you end up not doing it, and there's some science to back that idea up. But anyways, and so this is kind of an episode. Take some of what I say here with a bit of a grain of salt. It's a lot of the stuff in the beginning is just kind of going over a lot of this dumb shit. And I wasn't really going to publish it. What I was going to originally do was to listen to it, make some notes on it, re-record it perhaps in a different way, make it less long and less complicated and less controversial or whatever. But I figured, whatever. And I'm too lazy to do all that, to be honest with you. I don't really have time. So I think I figured I'd just share it here and I can change anything later if I feel like it. That's the beauty of Anchor. That's the beauty of podcasters, is if you don't really like where an episode went, you can always delete it or change it or edit it around or whatever it might be. It's not really permanent as much as it is with like YouTube. With YouTube, you can't really do that as much. Like, you can't really edit videos in that way. So anyways, hope you enjoyed this episode of The Specifist. This is kind of a deeper going into being triggered and emotions and stuff like this. So hope you enjoyed this, and talk to you in the next one. So I don't know if I'm going to do this episode or not, because I've done this before, but I want to go into this in a different way here a little bit. We're going to go into this in a less specific way, but going into this using psychology and whatnot, because it's just something that I'm really interested in, because it's just like, it's interesting to me how certain ideas within psychology kind of dispute, willingly or unwillingly, this new system that people have set up. So within society and culture, and we have this in college campuses and stuff like this as well, we have this idea that we have to like affirm others and affirm our emotions. And what I've become aware of, and we can see this literally happening in college campuses, where people are afraid of certain words and are triggered by things that they feel are racist or whatever it might be, even though it may not necessarily be racist at all, but they feel that way. And that counts in these circles. And so we live in this culture / society where feelings are more, in fact, are more important and are representative to these groups, these people. The feelings are representative of facts. If I feel X, that must mean that X is true, when that's not actually the way that it is. It's actually a cognitive distortion. It's called emotional reasoning. And there's a lot of cognitive distortions, and we can get into some of those. But what's really interesting to me is how this idea of being triggered, the idea of trigger warnings themselves, are actually not something that has been proven out to be useful. If anything, they've actually been proven out to cause more harm than good, because the trigger warning, not because the trigger warnings it's not necessarily because of the reason people might think. But what they find is that when people are given these kinds of trigger warnings, it actually furthers the emotional distress about around the trigger because of the nature of trigger warnings. You're warning somebody ahead of time about something, which prepares them for this emotionally, which sounds like it might work, but it doesn't, because it just makes them more emotionally distressed about this thing, whatever it is, right? And so you have these trigger warnings and you have these safe spaces where everybody has to be affirmed because they feel a certain way. And there's basically no wiggle. There's basically no middle ground around this, honestly. It's kind of stupid. But we have one side who's just like, well, feelings matter more than anything. Feelings matter more than facts. And then you have the other side who's like, oh, facts don't care about your feelings. And it's just like, that's not, like, both of those are just wrong in a lot of ways. Like, you can actually deal with these people where they are while still understanding the feelings and realizing the point of the feelings. That's the problem, is that we're going about this all wrong in culture and society. This is why I've always said that every worldview has a grain of truth, because it's usually true. So we have this culture in the society nowadays that tries to affirm people's feelings and emotions about something. And what I've really become aware of is that you really cannot trust emotions. You cannot trust what emotions are telling you. You cannot trust what emotions are saying to you. And you cannot trust what you are saying to yourself when you're in an emotional state. If you're depressed, if you're anxious, you can't trust what you're saying in those moments, because your emotions are influencing you in those situations. But what we've been doing as a society, for some stupid reason, is trusting what our emotions are saying and doing in those situations, which you might think is the right decision, but actually what that ends up doing is it ends up furthering the distress, because it ends up justifying the emotion when it's not necessarily justified at all. Now, the idea of emotional reasoning goes something along the lines of, like, I have an emotion of X, therefore I think X is true. If I feel like somebody's mad about something that I did, that must mean it's true when it's not necessarily true. This kind of thing, right? And so if you are having this emotion that says that everybody is racist and sexist and homophobic and all these things that they're telling you in college campuses anymore, it's ridiculous, then that means that it's true, because I'm feeling it. That must mean it's true. But that's not how feelings work. Feelings aren't actually telling you the truth. They're telling you what you feel. That's a very important difference. We have to become very, very distinct about those differences. Because otherwise, what we end up finding is we get become weaker, because we start listening to those feelings and we start believing that those feelings are actually telling us the truth in the first place, when they're not. They're just telling us what they feel. Not that those feelings are necessarily invalid. They're just feelings. We have to become willing to differentiate between feelings and truth. This is one reason why I'm kind of not really a big fan of the phrase "your truth is your truth and my truth," because it leaves up for interpretation this interpretation of, oh, well, if my truth is what I feel is true, then that is my truth. But that's not true at all. You can feel something that is actually inaccurate and not true at all, even for yourself, if you look deep enough and you look into what's going on deeply enough. You realize that you see what's freaky about emotions, especially negative emotions, is there's a sort of an illusion of permanency within the emotion itself. And I'll get into this, why this relates to what we're going to be talking about in this episode. But this is there's this illusion of permanency within negative emotions themselves. Like, oh, if I'm this way, it must mean something for me. Like, this must mean this is true or whatever. With positive emotions, you don't really have the same permanency effect for some strange reason. But and so because of that, you end up being in a situation where you can't really seem to go beyond the state of mind, because it feels permanent, because it looks permanent, because feelings and thoughts and the idea of truth kind of get bundled into one. And that's where we end up in a situation that we're in now, where everybody is triggered by everything. Everybody is offended by something somewhere. If you look anywhere online, somebody is offended. And somebody's going to listen. Because feelings are validated by people. So I want to make a caveat here before I start, because I know some people are going to make this point. What I'm talking about is not invalidating your feelings. And, you know, because you can actually do this with yourself or another person, where you can actually, like, talk with them about their emotions or whatever. And you can help them become aware of their emotions, and you can validate those emotions. But just because you're doing that does not mean that those emotions equal truth. And what those emotions are telling you is true. That is where the problem happens. That's where it starts to get into the territory of permanency that I'm talking about, this illusion of permanency. And so whenever you create trigger warnings and safe spaces and things like this, it justifies in the minds of people that it must be true. But it's not true. It's not actually true at all that, for instance, cops are actually more racist than they've ever been, kind of thing. People like to tell you that, but it's not actually true. I'm not saying there's no racism, but it's not as extreme as people want to tell you. And things like this. And this is why you have to be very, very wary of what your feelings are telling you. Doesn't mean your feelings are wrong. Your feelings are, they're more like, it's almost like what your feelings are is a sort of metric of what you are thinking / feeling. It's not about what is true. And so if you make this permanency mistake where you think what your feelings are telling you is true, you will be finding yourself in a situation where you are unable to go beyond the feeling now, because it's true. If it's true, the feeling is actually justified. It's actually valid in this way, and it's actually affirmed. And that's what we've been doing with people. We're affirming themselves and affirming their feelings, when what we need to be doing is not necessarily invalidating feelings, but becoming able to differentiate and distinguish between feelings and truth. Feelings and what is real. What is actually going on in the world. This kind of thing. People tell you that the world is worse than it's ever been in some ways, and it is, and things like this, because that's how they feel, but that's not necessarily true. Is that actually true? You can find facts to confirm or deny that, and that's the whole point. But that's not what they're doing. Every time that this happens in these areas, in these ways, it becomes a trigger warning. Like, no, you can't tell us something that we disagree with, because that's what we feel. What we feel must be true, because that's what we've been told. And honestly, I don't really blame these people for this reaction, because they haven't really been taught better by these people who should be knowing better. And who should be knowing that this is not really useful or helpful for these people because it increases anxiety, it increases emotional distress and anger and things like this, which doesn't help them. So I have to be highly suspicious of what your emotions tell you. The more your emotions tell you, the more you need to distrust what your emotions say. Usually speaking. But we live in this culture now that tries to validate what feelings are telling you. Because for some reason, logic is, it's just anathema, apparently. And really what it comes to down to, in my opinion, is what do you get from this? If it's about safety, and if it's about feeling validated, I mean, I guess you feel validated, but you don't really feel safe. Because you can see you're going to be experiencing things that they're going to go against your feelings. It's just the way life is going to be. Unless you live in a bubble, unless you decide to just wall yourself off from all of the experience or as much experience as possible, which will make you weaker and weaker and weaker as time goes by. And you will be unable to really navigate the world properly because the world is going to be harsh. It's going to be, and I'm not even talking about like people. I'm talking about like, seriously, like you could die one day without even you knowing what is coming. That's just how life works. But if you're hell-bent on living from this state of mind where feelings are facts and feelings must be true because that's what people have told me, you're going to be sorely disillusioned by life. Because there will always be a feeling that you have, and there will always be life. And life is going to disagree with your feelings. This is why I learned the lessons of impermanency and imperfection, because it helps you to start to differentiate and distinguish between emotion and what is. And so we're kind of in this situation where it's triggering to disagree with somebody. And not, I wouldn't even say all cases, honestly. I wouldn't even say necessarily even most cases. But in enough cases to where it becomes a situation where you can't speak out of turn. And it's crazy. Because, you know, like, in your college bubble, if this is, you know, happening in college, which it is, this is going to be easily dealt with in some ways. But once you get out of college, you're going to be faced with all kinds of things that you disagree with, that you feel is wrong. And you're not going to be able to necessarily enter a safe space. This is one of the reasons why learning imperfection and impermanence is so important, because once you start to become aware of the imperfection of reality, the imperfection of emotion versus reality and stuff like this as well, you start realizing that reality is always going to win. Like, no matter what you want, no matter what you feel, no matter what you hope for, reality is always going to win. Maybe humans win sometimes, but that doesn't necessarily mean that reality lost. Reality is still won. It just means that we're doing something that can be done within reality's parameters, whatever that is. What would that be, like the third law, the three laws of thermodynamics, or some other kind of physical law of reality? I know I'm kind of going all over the place, but like, this is where we are in society. We have to validate each other. We have to affirm our emotions. We have to affirm things. And it's just not, you know, if that's the world you want to live in, you know, there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. But it's not really going to fix your emotional problems. if anything, I'd find what's going to end up happening is you're going to be triggered by more and more and more. It reminds me kind of this story. I think I read it in a book somewhere. It's really funny, actually, at the time. Where basically what they were talking about was this guy who was in a cave, right? And basically he's been a hermit for like 20 years. He kept moving from place to place, places that are more have more and more solitude, just meditating and doing all the meditating things that he would do. And then he enters into a city. He's like, oh wow, this is too loud. I have to go back into my cave again. Because it's too much. It's too much for because he has gotten used to such a low level of stimulus that being in a populated area is very difficult, kind of thing. And it's kind of what I think of, because what you're being allowed to do is become weaker and weaker and weaker. That's what you're doing. That's what people are allowing you to do when they do this, when they affirm your emotions in this way. You know, I don't really like to make the whole man versus woman comparison, because it's not really accurate in all cases. But typically speaking, this is one of the reasons why you might find that men are, on average, going to be tougher than women. Not because men are inherently tougher than women, but because, typically speaking, when it comes to a woman, in many cases, they are actually more affirmed than men when it comes to their emotions. And so you had this situation where, because of that, they are actually weaker in a lot of ways than men. Not all women, probably not even, I'd say, you know, at a certain point and level and age and maturity, maybe not even most women. But when they're at these certain ages, especially when they're younger, and I don't even mean younger as in like 10 or 11, but like 20s, even I would say, depending on, you know, their circumstances and stuff like this as well. But, and even perhaps even 30s at certain levels as well. But they are more affirmed, emotionally speaking, than men. They're more validated. Their emotions are actually like listened to. And, you know, versus men, you know, like if a man were to talk to another man about his emotions, he'd be like, well, get out of here. And they say that's toxic masculinity, but it's not. It's what it actually is becoming aware of the deep nature of emotions. Because, so there's two basic extremes to this, right? Which is what we have in society. There's no moderation here. This is the problem. In some ways, people see this in these two basic extremes. I mean, there is moderation in reality, but that often sometimes kind of has to come through experience, but it's another episode. This is why I always stress being alone with yourself and just becoming aware of yourself and just working with whatever that is. So, on one extreme level, it's like your emotions should always be validated, which is not always true in reality and in real life for most people. I get that. I'm not saying that's true. But that's like the extreme that you see in colleges and stuff like this. On the other extreme is where your emotions are never validated at all or are laughed at or whatever. And while you might think that, you know, to have men who don't validate other men's emotions is toxic masculinity, what that helps to build is strength, because then the man realizes like their emotions aren't as what's the word I'm looking for here? Their emotions are not reality as much as they originally thought, and so they might have had been in a situation where like they were angry or they're crying or whatever when they're a kid. And because men tell other men, you know, not to cry or whatever, that helps to build strength and resilience over time. Eventually, over time, you can build strength and resilience because you're aware that your emotions don't necessarily equal reality. Because with a man, typically speaking, not always, and it, I'd say that this is kind of decreasing, honestly, but typically speaking, especially if you're in kind of more of a lower class situation, a man, typically speaking, is not shielded from the harsh realities of the world. Hey guys, editing David here. So by no means am I saying that women are not shielded from reality or anything, because this is not what it means. What that basically is referring to is, emotionally speaking, there is more of a support basis for women, typically speaking, versus men, which there isn't really any of that. And of course, you get people who are like, well, that's sexist, or that's toxic masculinity. And it's like, well, that's not really true, like I've explained before. So I just want to make that point, because I'm not saying that this is a complete shielded versus unshielded, or this is a complete binary, you know, women versus men, like men are less shielded from reality than women, because this is not absolutely true. But they have more, they typically speaking, not always, maybe not even, I'd say maybe not even most of the time, but a good number of the time are more supported for the situations they've been in versus men who are not really supported. And we can go into examples and examples of this, which really doesn't really matter to this process. I just wanted to make that point because I already know it's a good point people would make, and it's true. So yeah. And so because of that, is stronger. Not all men. I'd say most men. I'd say if you're middle class or above, this is probably not true in most cases. Now, if you've struggled your way up to middle class and above, sure, maybe you're in that situation, but, or maybe you were in that situation, but if you weren't, if you kind of were born into this or whatever, this is not something that applies to you necessarily. And you know, for myself necessarily, I was kind of in a situation where it wasn't quite as middle classy slash rich or whatever, but it was like, you know, there is a bit of a sheltering that happens when you're in certain situations, which didn't really work. It didn't really help me necessarily to be sheltered in this way. Right? And so to actually be given the harsh realities of life is, to a certain extent, a sort of a strengthening process. Now, there are extremes to it where the emotions of the person are like laughed at, like, oh, you feel that way, you're dumb, you know, this kind of thing. That is probably a little extreme. But on the other hand, that shows you that not everybody's going to care necessarily about what you think. And you really shouldn't care about what other people think of you in the first place, because of those kinds of reactions that you're going to get. Because you're always going to get those kinds of reactions from people. I mean, that's just going to be a fact. I mean, if you want to live in a world where people are constantly affirming you, nothing necessarily wrong with that, but there are going to be people who are not going to do that to you. And you have to accept and become cognizant of that reality and take that into account when you're in reality and in real life, which you have to be in at least to a certain extent to survive. So men have different responses in that way. Women deal with it in different ways. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that women don't deal with harsh realities, but typically it's in, you know, there's more of like the bond level with women, this kind of thing, not always, I'd say not even, well, it depends, I guess, like I said. But typically speaking, that is the case. And that's, you know, to these people on the left, it's like, oh, well, that's toxic masculinity. You shouldn't have to hold your feelings in, and you should cry. It's like, why? That doesn't really help you as much as you think it does. Because it makes you weaker. It makes you unable to actually, because you're not going to be always in a situation where you can do this. So think of it this way, right? Like, imagine you're in a situation, a survival situation, a literal survival situation where you're encountering a bear. Well, let's not give a bear example, because actually bears are actually not going to really do this necessarily. People think bears are actually violent, but what I've actually read is that that's not actually true as much as people think it is. But anyways, let's say you're in a situation and you're in the woods or something, and an animal in these woods are kind of threatened by you, and they are trying to attack you or whatever. What works? Does crying work in that situation? Does trying to talk to this animal about your feelings about, you shouldn't hurt me because that's not what I want, does that work in that situation? Not really, no. It doesn't work. It doesn't help. I mean, sure, you can say, well, that's different context, but that's reality. That's life. Life is survival. But we live in a culture now where, and it's kind of an interesting idea. I forget exactly how he puts it, but there's this idea within this idea of cultural evolution. It's a book. I think it's called Cultural Evolution as well, where basically there's two basic ideas in survival, two basic stages of culture. The first is what you normally get, where it's just like survival. I forget the words that he uses, because the words are actually very, very apt for the things that he's talking about in this book. But this book is really interesting. It's called, I think it's called Cultural Evolution. It's by Ronald Engelhardt or something. Anyways, talks about the first stage of culture / society, whatever that is. It's a survival stage, right? You have to survive. Most people in this culture are surviving. The second stage is what you'd call self-expression, which is what we're dealing with right now, where everybody's trying to express itself or whatever it is. I forget exactly what it's called. I don't know if it's called self-expression or expression. And while that's great in some ways, if we don't take into account within our own worldviews and understandings the harsh realities of the world, we're going to be unable to deal with the world properly. And that's what we're dealing with right now. It's kind of crazy to me how people tell you that you should listen to your emotions and trust your emotions. But that's not actually true. Like, literally, there's this cognitive distortion where they tell you that the emotions themselves are not necessarily equaling truth. But, hold on. So, the deep level of this is actually very deep, because, so, usually the way this seems to go, the way that it looks, at least, and it may not be this way in real life, but like the way that it's usually portrayed is there's either one extreme or another, right? Like the emotions are extremely validated, or there's no validation at all. Or, you know, you're talking about emotional reasoning. Just because you have an emotional state, that does not mean that what that emotional state is pointing to is actually true. Like, if you think this person's bad at you, does not mean that's actually true in real life, kind of thing. Does not mean that your emotions are invalid, necessarily. What that really means is that your emotions are your emotions, and truth and reality is reality. That's what that means. And so you could actually be
in a state where you are, and this is kind of going all over the place. Sorry about that. I kind of wanted to originally start with just being triggered and stuff like this, but we'll get into that as well a little bit in this episode. But anyways, so there is a state where you are able to become aware, notice your emotions, and realize that just because emotion X is saying X does not mean X is true. And from that place, you used to understand that your emotions, just because your emotions are still there, your emotions are still emotions. You're still going to feel those emotions or whatever. And that's okay, you know, whatever it is, right? And so you're going beyond needing to get rid of the emotion, or going beyond believing the emotion is true, or going beyond needing to validate or invalidate the emotion in the first place. And so this is reality right here. The dark nature of emotion is that you can't really trust what emotion tells you. Well, your mind, because what I've noticed is that your mind, when it's under the influence, you can almost think of emotions as like a toxic thing. It's almost like a toxin, not a toxic, but a toxin, like a intoxicant, in a sense. And if you thought of it in that way, it'd be actually closer to the truth than you'd realize. Anyways, and so because the emotion is an intoxicant, whatever your thoughts are saying when this emotion is happening is not necessarily going to be true. And so really what you have to learn to do is to find evidence that might agree with that emotion, yes, but also find evidence that doesn't agree with that emotion as well. Find something that doesn't agree. And so if you have this emotion / thought that says, oh, this person is, you know, annoyed at me or whatever, you can look for evidence that might suggest that's true, but you also have to look for evidence that might suggest that, well, this might actually not be true. Things like this. Because that's how you become, in my opinion, that's how you become wise. Now, a wise person does not deny knowledge because he disagrees with it. I think one of the wisest people that have ever existed is like Socrates, in my opinion. Because what he does is he will tell you, like, well, what is true? What is good? What is useful? The triple filter test. This idea of the triple filter test basically goes something like this, right? What is it that you're telling me? Is it true? Is it useful? Is it good? Sorry. Is it truthful? Is it good? Is it useful? Meaning that, is it truthful? Is it something that you can actually see in reality, kind of thing? Is it good? Meaning, like, is it something that is going said something that is good for, like, to hear about somebody or whatever? And is it useful? Things like this. And he was like testing people on what they thought they knew and things like this. It's a very interesting idea. But that's not what we're doing. In society, we're affirming things. We're affirming what people feel because they don't want to feel uncomfortable, which, you know, that's one of the deep problems of emotions. You cannot trust what your emotions tell you at all. I would say like 90% of the time you can't trust what emotions tell you, even if not more. It sounds very black and white to say that, but it is kind of true. You know, it's like one of the it's like the examples that I mean, there's so many examples I could give of this. Like, if you're falling in love with somebody, is an example too. Like, somebody might be like, well, David, what if I'm falling in love with somebody? Shouldn't I trust what that emotion is telling me? Like, I should maybe, like, listen to that emotion. Maybe that means something That's true. Sure. But the problem is that emotions blind you. And so you might be falling in love with this person that you're seeing, whatever it is. But you might also be blinded by this love. And so this person, it might not be the person that you think he is, slash she is, slash they, whatever it is. And so you're now trusting the emotion and what the emotion is saying, like, oh, this person is so nice and so wonderful, when that might not actually be true in reality. And so, like, imagine like one day you buy a cat or you get a cat from somewhere. And you like the cat. The cat looks very cute. Maybe he's very young as well. And then you realize one day that the cat is actually not cute. He's actually very mean. He's always growling at you and he's always hissing at you. And things like this. That's what I'm talking about, right? This is why you cannot trust emotions. Ever. Doesn't mean that your emotions should be like invalidated, like, oh, you feel that way, you're so dumb, like this kind of thing. It just means that you cannot trust what your emotions, you cannot believe what your emotions / thoughts tell you. Because once you do, oh boy, are you in for a wild ride of your life. And I don't mean that in a good way. Like, you can be in a roller coaster and it'd be nice and it'd be fun. You know, you could call that happiness and whatnot. But if it's in an attachment roller coaster, it could be fun until you realize, like, oh my God, we're going off a cliff and it's going crazy. What's happening? You know? Because the emotion is taken over your reasoning factors, your reasoning faculties. That's how emotions work. You get almost, if you thought of emotions as an intoxicant, like an alcohol or a drug, you'd actually be closer than you realize. Believe it or not, like, this is how your emotions work. This is what your emotions do. Not that they're, like, wrong and you should, like, blame your emotions and try to resist them or whatever. Because that's, what's that going to do but create more emotion, more anger and resistance towards the emotion itself? So, no, you don't blame the emotion. You don't invalidate the emotion. You notice it. You become aware of it without trying to make it into something. Like, oh, I must be feeling this way. That must mean that this is true for me. Like, if I feel like I'm a failure, that means mean like I am a failure. Well, not necessarily. And so you had to look for examples that might agree with that, but to also look for examples that don't agree with that as well. The wisest fucking thing a person can do is find examples, yes, that agree with their narrative, but also find examples that disagree with their narrative. That's what makes you wise. That's what makes you strong. That's what makes you fucking powerful as hell. The most fucking powerful thing you can do is to go counter to your thoughts and emotions. Because your thoughts and emotions are, let's be honest, they're fallible as fuck. They're the most fallible thing that you have. Fallible just means like they're not, you know, you can't trust them. You can't trust your thoughts. You can't trust your emotions. But that's what we're doing in society nowadays. We're like, oh, you're feeling this way. That must mean it's true for you, in this kind of thing. Like, postmodernism kind of sits there and like says, like, there's no absolute truth and your truth is your truth and my truth is my truth. It is still truth. And it's like, that's not really true. I mean, I have my problems with this idea of objective truth, and I've talked about that in these episodes before in this podcast, but that does not mean that my truth is true and your truth is true. My truth could be false and your truth could be true, but it could still be false. And my truth could still be true, or at least in certain parts of it. Right? My truth. I really don't like that phrase because it gives truth to something that might not actually be true. If you said my opinion or my thoughts or my emotions or whatever, you would be at least closer and more accurate to what's actually going on here. But once you start saying my truth, your truth, it's like, that's not what's true, though. Like, I could have the truth that I am able to run 10,000 miles, but that's not actually true. Like, I can't run 10,000 miles. Like, I could have the truth that I can actually see, but I can't actually see. That's not true. So that's why I've always kind of been wary of this phrase, like, oh, my truth, your truth. It's what it's really pointing to is experience, my experience, your experience, but they're not using the word experience. And so people aren't aware that that's what it's referring to. And of course, the people using the phrase aren't really aware that that's what they're referring to either, usually. And so that makes them kind of like not realize that they are furthering this problem of emotional reasoning. So, in basic, shortening this a little bit, usually what I find is that when it comes to truth, most people are kind of in this in-between area where they're not true. What their knowledge isn't completely true or completely false. It's usually kind of in the middle or between those extremes. So to shorten this here, because I don't want to go too long with this crap, because like the one that I did before, the power of not caring what other people think of you, it ended up going way too long. So let's basically whittle this down to a basic bullet points. Number one, we are in a society that is increasing this idea of being triggered by everything and truth over feelings. Number two, there is a problem with that because that is encompassing a bit of what I've called emotional reasoning. And because of that, number three, it doesn't actually solve the problems that it is trying to solve. And it actually causes bigger problems that it's not aware of, because it doesn't decrease the emotions. It actually increases them, which is number four, point number four. That's basically the point of this. And I'll probably do some deep edits to this. I might do some editing to this because there's a lot of information here. But, you know, this is where we get into this deep problem of emotions and the question of what do emotions actually mean, and what are you actually supposed to do about your emotions and things like this, because one party says that emotions equal truth. Another party says emotions are irrelevant to truth. And it's like, well, actually, what I've come to understand is that your emotions influence truth, influence what you see as true or false. It doesn't mean that what you see is actually true or false. It just influences things. Like, for instance, if you believe that, for instance, things are worse than they've ever been or whatever, and somebody tells you that's not true, and it could actually give you examples and descriptions and statistics and stuff, you will probably get triggered by that and disbelieve it because you believe the opposite, right? That's what I'm talking about. And so you are faced with an untruth. You think it's an untruth, which is not an untruth. See, this is what, why I cannot stand groups. Because I'm really not a big group person because, you know, with the conservatives, you know, because a lot of this is coming from left versus right in a lot of ways. So with the left, in a lot of ways, they're engaging in this triggering problem. They're offended by everything, it seems like, especially the further left you go, more moderate left people are not as offended, but you know that this is kind of where we get into this deep problem. And so the deep left, which is like the normal left these days, it seems like, the moderate, what you'd call the far left, although not far, far left, there's, so the way that I've noticed this go is there are moderates, which are people that you could say are center left, center right, and centrists. And then there are actual left versus right, conservative and Democrats. Democrats are becoming further left. Conservatives are becoming, I don't know if I'd say they're becoming further right necessarily, but they're becoming more radicalized against the left. I mean, there is definitely elements of the conservative party that are becoming further right, actually. But there are actually elements of what you could call like the IDW, the intellectual dark web, which is not necessarily further right, but is incorporating some of these more moderate elements and are more libertarian right elements as well. And so the left, the typical left, the Democrats, are far left. They're giving you these crazy policies. And the right is far right, and they're giving you these crazy policies, and there's nobody's in this. And as soon as you point out the center, they're going like, no, you're wrong, you're dumb, you're stupid. But at least the far right will listen. The right will typically listen more. The left will get triggered by what you're saying. Doesn't mean the right is better. The right has its own set of problems. We need to stop thinking in terms of better or worse when it comes to this as well, because in some ways, the right is better about this, but in some ways, they're not. In some ways, the left is actually more correct, but in some ways, they're just not. Because they're extreme. They're becoming more and more extreme. Because they basically bought into this emotional reasoning that we're talking about. And they get stuck in their emotions. And they don't see the problem with that. They don't understand what's going on. And this is why you have to be very, very careful of not just your emotions, but your thoughts as well. Like, you have to be willing to not trust every thought that you have. And you have to be willing to not trust what somebody in your party / group says. This is why it's so fucking powerful to be almost like Sigma. Because you have to become aware of the deep problem with assumptions and bubbles and how these assumptions and bubbles create what people call reality, what they call reality. Because the right is making one point, the left is making another point, and they're both talking circles around each other because they're both missing the point.
Charge.
Because they're not all encompassing, which is what you need to be if you're tier two. This is why being in tier one is such a problem. It's not because tier one is evil or bad. It's because they can only see with themselves, with their current stages. They can't see beyond it. And so you get people in the right who are typically speaking stage blue, orange, And sometimes become more radical stage blue orange because of the beams of stage green. And because of that, they can only see what's in blue orange, and they can only agree with what's in blue orange. And that becomes more and more and more what we're saying. And then, of course, you get the same problem in the left, where the left is kind of stage green. I'd say mostly stage green in spiral dynamics. There's the episodes. If you want to know more about spiral dynamics, there's episodes that I've made, and there's videos on YouTube. You can search for spiral dynamics or stage blue or purple or green or orange or whatever it is online. You can find a bunch of information. If you really want to know a lot of information, you can look up a book. It's called Spiral Dynamics, Mastering Value Leadership and Change. But anyways, so the stage green people can only see the stage green. They can't see anything else. They can't see beyond this. And so because of that, because both stages are in this, same problem, they can't see what's really going on. They can't see what's happening. And so both of them think they're in a bubble. Both of them think that the other one is in a bubble. Because they're both right. They are both in the bubble. In some ways, the left bubble is more pronounced. In some ways, the right bubble is more radicalized. It just depends on where you're looking. And the other element of this as well is overgeneralization. Where what will happen is the cultural groups will say right or left, like the right is this way, the left is this way. But the left is not necessarily a monolith. It's not necessarily like absolutely one way or another way. I mean, there's different subsections of this. But typically speaking, what I find is that this is where, and this is true. Like, what are the things that some of them say is somewhat true? There is a hive mind on the left because they're collectivist. But there's also a hive mind on the right because they're also collectivist in different ways. Especially the more stage blue they get, the more radically dogmatic they become. You know, if they're more into stage orange, you know, there's kind of like a blue orange where it's like there's more blue than orange, and they're in their own sort of hive mind. And there's also stage orange blue where there's more orange than blue, and they're not necessarily in the same kind of hive mind. And so what typically happens is that the left will look at both of these types of people and think they're in the same hive mind. And they're not. They're not the same people. And they're not necessarily in the same group as the other person, as the other element. The stage blue orange is different from the stage orange blue. One has more blue, one has more orange. Typically speaking, orange-minded people are not in a hive mind in the same way as a blue-minded person. They're in a hive mind, but their hive mind is individualism. So there's more personal responsibility, and there's more differentiation that can happen within this orange-blue meme in this way. But because most of the time, what I find with the left anymore is that they've gone so extreme stage green. They are actually in the hive mind. They're very much in what some people want to call a cult. I wouldn't call it a cult because that's, to be honest with you, I think the word cult is kind of used dogmatically these days. But there is a sort of kernel of truth to what they're saying. And a lot of it has to do with what happens when you trust your emotions, because I don't think anybody would disagree with having the ability to feed everybody, to give everybody clothing, to give everybody housing as much as possible. The problem is, how do you do this? And are you going to cause a monetary strain in the budget and other things by doing this. Hey there, Editing David here. So this is also one of the reasons why human corruption exists and why corruption exists in government in general. It's because the people within the government are in a stage, orange or blue, where the corruption is possible. And of course, people will blame the government for this and be like, oh, the elites are causing these problems and then the one percenters. But really, it's a human problem. This is what we need to get to our heads. This is not about elites and the one percenters. This is a human problem. Humans are corruption. Humans are corrupt. And things like this. And also the other thing to keep in mind as well with this is that it's not always about the monetary budget as well. The other element of this is that sometimes what ends up happening is the laws themselves that are passed or that are suggested by the left are just not feasible for various reasons. You know, like a lot of them want to talk about defunding the police, but that doesn't really work. It doesn't really help the situation. It doesn't really do any good. And so that's one of the reasons why it's important to not trust emotions as well. Because it'll tell you things that are not necessarily going to be true. And so the right is more aware of that problem than the left is. The left gets stuck in the emotional aspect without seeing the problems with what they're pointing out. Even though the left is somewhat right. They're also wrong because they're trying to do this through force and through government means, which doesn't necessarily work because... Well, number one, you can't really make a law saying love each other, which is what they're trying to do in some ways. And also number two is oftentimes you get a situation where it's like I've talked about in the episode that I did called, what was it, My Mentality Explained or something, where I talked about how you could have an enlightened master set up a group, but the group people in the group could be in a stage below this enlightened master. And the example that I brought up was Osho, which is a perfect example because that's what happened with his group that he created. And then, of course, he sort of stopped intervening in the group. He stopped kind of showing up for the group as much. And so that created the possibility for group dynamics to change and to turn into drama and problems. Which is why these kinds of policies, while they are well-meaning on the part of the left, I think in most cases, I'd say, well, maybe not most cases, many cases, they, in practice, don't necessarily work because of group dynamics and group problems. And if you do not take this into account, you are not going to be able to fix this problem. This is why Tier 1 is such a damn wreck. It's such a fucking mess. It's so crazy to me how convoluted Tier 1 makes everything. Look, because they are so stuck on like one thing over other things. And they're not seeing the consequences. They're not seeing the imperfections with what they're doing. And so you get a situation where, like, one group is saying one thing, the orange group, blue group, for instance, and then you have the green group, stage green group, maybe some orange in the stage green, so you could have, like, green orange and things like this. But that group is saying another thing, and they're fighting with each other, creating wreckage along the way, creating destruction, creating problems, and creating more convolutions because they're not seeing the problems. They're not dealing with orange blue in the way that they should be dealt with. Which is why I want to do a deep episode on spiral dynamics in future about this, because we need to learn how to work with rather than against the other stages. this is tier two's this is the tier two's perspective. This is why tier two is necessary and useful, and not just useful and necessary. Well, I would say necessary, like absolutely morally necessary, but like it's absolutely necessary to enter tier two at certain levels, especially at this level, because you can of the wreckage of tier one, of the destruction. Mental and sometimes physical that it causes to itself and to opposite stages within tier one. And so because of that, tier two is absolutely necessary if we want to evolve. Yeah, because we're all just what we keep forgetting. What a lot of these people keep forgetting is just we're all humans in this experience. Like, who do you really know anything at all? 68% charge. Because you might think that you do. And I mean, you do. Don't get me wrong. It's not like you don't know anything at all. But in reality, if you look at what's really going on, you realize that we're all just humans trying to make the best of what we experienced. And we have to take that into account when we're making decisions, when we're looking at people, when we're trying to do anything at all. And that's not what's being added to this discussion. That's why this discussion is radicalizing and becoming more problematic for people, because they're not seeing the human part of this. And the fact of imperfect knowledge and imperfect experience and understanding, because you know, and it goes back to cancel culture as well to me, because you know, many people in their 20s and teens and stuff like this were probably very cringe, honestly. And so if you were to judge that person on that time when they were this way in the 20s, when they're now not in their 20s, maybe the 30s or 40s now, whatever it is, you will be making a grave mistake, because the person could be completely different because they saw the problems of their own actions in the 20s, because we're all just kind of experiencing and learning from our experiences because we're imperfect. This is why we need to stop thinking of, and this is the same thing with corruption to me as well, because a lot of people and a lot of politics is as well is about pointing out the problems and corruptions of the world. Like, oh, look at all these people, these elites are so bad, like all the one percenters, and they're all these problems they're causing. It's like, well, yeah, that's not a one percenter problem. That's not an elite problem. That's not a political problem. That's a human problem. Corruption is a human problem. You're engaged in corruption. I guarantee it. You have some corruption somewhere. The only difference is that you don't have billions of dollars to spend to further that to corruption. That's the difference. This is a human problem. And because you have one group who's like, oh, personal responsibility, personal responsibility, personal responsibility, personal responsibility. And they're not wrong, but they go extreme with that. And you have the other group who's like, no, group responsibility, group responsibility, group responsibility. And they're not wrong, but they're going extreme with that. It's like, no. We have to combine these two somehow. Like, this is not black and white. People, come on now, please. Please, for the fuck of life, for fucking life's sake. We need to stop going with black and white thinking, please. Because it's true, we do need more personal responsibility and like. But just because we need more personal responsibility does not mean that's the only thing that's involved in life. Because, like, imagine being in a place where you have no real businesses or anything like this. There's all kinds of problems going on in this area. All, no amount of personal responsibility is going to make you rich. It's going to make you, you could own a business perhaps in this area, but like if there's no way to transport the stuff to your area, or if it's too dangerous to do so because it's a very violent area, which is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with areas where businesses are literally closing down because it's too violent. Because violence causes poverty. Crime causes poverty. Poverty does not cause crime. I'd say in most cases, and I pointed this out in an episode a long time ago, it's called Poverty Does Not Cause Crime. It's actually the other way around. Something like, along those lines. And so if you try to start a business in these areas, it works. You could, but it's more difficult because there's a lot more problems. There's a lot more things that get in the way of you starting this business or doing this thing that you're trying to do. Of course, you could move out of this area perhaps as well. But that takes money as well. It takes time. And it means breaking up the family unit if the family lives in this area, which it probably does. If you're raised in this area, right? And so personal responsibility is only part of the solution. I think it's probably half of the solution, if not a little bit more. But it's not the only part of this solution. That's the difference. You can be nuanced and understand the personal responsibility is necessary, but also understand that there is some degree of collective responsibility that we need to take into account. Now, to what degree, now, how we do that is a different story. Like, I don't know how exactly we do that, but that's the problem. A lot of people in politics think they know everything. They might not think that, but that's the way they come across. And it's just like, dude, you don't know everything. You just don't. If you think you know everything, you don't. I'm just going to say flat out, you just don't. And there's people that I've watched that are aware that they don't know everything. And there's people that I've watched that I really like, that are like really, really good with certain subjects. Like Actual Justice Warrior, for instance, is really good with understanding crime and how crime works and things like this. And there's others that might be really good at understanding the economy. And there's others that are really good at understanding foreign policy and things like this. And honestly, I'm not one of those purple people who will like just listen to what a person or a group says and just believe what the person or group says. That's the difference. You have to question your emotions, your thoughts, what the thoughts and emotions of the group is, because the group, it can be wrong. I mean, it's possible, isn't it? But if that's all you're listening to and you're not looking outside this group, and if you're not like researching what they're saying and going like, wait, hold on, is this really actually true? No, maybe not. Then you're not really learning anything and you're not wise. You're not going to be wise and you're going to be stuck. And you're going to wonder why you're angry all the time. And you're going to wonder why you're so caught in drama. And I was in that state. I was somewhat radicalized, and not necessarily in a violent way, but I was kind of like one of those like people who were just noticing this ridiculosity of the left. And it's like, what are you people doing? And I'm not like a huge conservative or anything. But I just saw that. I just kept going like, what are you people doing? And I realized what's going on. Like, oh, this is how this works. And so, yeah, we have to learn to see the humanness as much as possible, because otherwise we get stuck in blaming and like, oh, you're so dumb, and look at how cult-like you are as a group or whatever it is. I don't trust groups. I don't trust groups. I don't trust emotions. I don't trust thoughts. And you shouldn't trust thoughts implicitly either. Not that thoughts or groups or whatever are necessarily wrong. Absolutely. They're just thoughts, groups, emotions, whatever. And they don't necessarily represent what is real. They're attempting to represent what is real, but that does not mean that they are real or that they represent what is actually real. So, yeah, it is kind of stupid, but like this whole, I don't know what it is anymore. Like we, honestly, what I think people need to do, literally need to learn how to do is just like stay away from social media for like a week and not care about what social media is telling them and what people are affirming for them. Like, oh, you're so amazing. You go girl or you go boy or whatever. And, you know, all this kind of stuff, because that's how they get you. That's how they get you stuck. This is why it's so amazing to be able to not go with the group and kind of be Sigma-like and just kind of like be willing to say like, hey, well, you know, this says that kind of disagrees with what you're saying. Doesn't mean that what they're saying is wrong. Like, this is where I've always been very different, especially within the past few years or so, because there would be a time where I'd be like saying something because I believe what I'm saying or because I disagree with what they're saying or whatever it is. But anymore, what it is I notice something that contradicts or whatever, and I point that out. Like, it doesn't mean that I agree with what's contradicting. It just means it's an interesting contradicting. It just means that just that contradiction might disprove at least partially what you're claiming. It's kind of like what Pyrrhonism comes into play here. So, anyways, this kind of went on longer than I was hoping it would go. I don't know if I'm going to actually release this, to be honest with you, but we'll see. Anyways, hope you enjoy this episode. And if I release it, then I'll talk to you in the next one.